Hey son, hey son, it's Jorgen here with Social Media Know-How. Emails, love them or loathe them, they're an essential part of any marketing strategy nowadays. And that's why I've had a chat with Tamsin Fox-Davis of Constant Contact all about email marketing. But before we listen to this, let's pay the bills.
SM London Live is back on the 11th of November 2015 and is bigger and better than ever. Did you know that one of our speakers and the founder of Social Chain, Steve Bartlett, started the hashtag, You Know You're British When? If you haven't had a chance to meet Queen Elizabeth, fear not, come and meet the hashtag King at our event on November 11th at Bounce, a venue made for people with serious ping pong power. Use your exclusive promo code PODCAST to get 10% off your tickets. Visit socialmedialondon.co.uk to find out more now.
All right, let's get this show on the road. Okay, so I'm here with Tamsin Fox-Davis, and today I wanted to talk a little bit about email marketing. How are you doing today, Tamsin?
I am very well, thank you. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Very good. And Tamsin is, of course, the small business evangelist at Constant Contact here in the UK. And I've had a little look at your Twitter bio. It does say that you love small business in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
You also adore dogs, boats, cakes, shows, trikes, and books.
Yes. I have a motley collection of those things at home. So we've got three dogs, two of which have only got three legs and the other one has a limp.
Aww.
So people tend to like look at us a bit funny when we all go out together and they're like, what are you doing to your animals? and we live on a boat. So yeah, so we're in Kent. I live on the Medway.
Yes, so you're coming to us from Kent, the Garden of England. I just wanted to point that out.
It is.
And also in your bio, it says that you're a not-so-secret steampunk and geek. So I naturally have to ask, what's a steampunk?
Yes, there's people either go, oh, great, or oh, that's weird, or what now? So there's one of three responses I tend to get. So steampunk is a literary genre. That's really where it originated and is now a subculture as well. So you will probably have seen some steampunks or steampunk elements in a lot of kind of TV and film. And the best way to describe it is that steampunk books and stories are based on Victorian inspired science fiction, so the sort of the H.G. Wells, Jules Verne, you know, Journey to the Center of the Earth, that kind of thing. And the way that more current writers have taken it on board is they basically said, okay, well, you know, if the age of steam had progressed and, you know, you had rocket ships that were powered by steam, what would that have been like? So if you've seen films like Wild Wild West, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, we were talking earlier, some of the new Sherlock Holmes films, that kind of stuff, you will have seen steampunk elements. So if you see people, they're wearing Victorian costume, but then they've got contraptions and they normally have like wearing top hats with goggles on them, which is obviously for flying our airships.
Of course.
Then that's how you can tell. If you see a hat with goggles on, 9 times out of 10, it's a steampunk.
Right. So I'm sure everyone listening to this is now Google imaging steampunk.
Yes.
And, they'll get in touch with you if they have further questions. Great. Now, back to our topic of today, email marketing. First mm-hmm. of all, could you tell us about your role at Constant Contact?
Yeah, sure. So I've been with Constant Contact for about 3 years, and Constant Contact's really the largest email marketing service provider of paying customers in the world. And we opened our UK office about 3.5 years ago, at which point I was invited to join the team. So I was already using Constant Contact myself, and I was a Constant Contact business partner. I was running my own marketing mentoring organization. So I was teaching small businesses how to do their own marketing. And my role at Constant Contact is very much an extension of that. So it's very education focused. That's one thing that I really love actually about working with Constant Contact, is that we believe in helping first and selling second. And that although we have great marketing tools, if you don't know how to do some decent marketing in the first place, you're not going to get the most out of them. So my role is delivering a lot of that education. I spend a lot of time speaking at conferences around the UK and into Europe as well, and also working with our business partners too. So I help and support them to do the same thing that I do, and to make sure that their customers are getting the most that they can out of their digital marketing.
Good stuff. And if we look at, emails. So emails have been around probably as long as the interwebs itself. Why would you say email marketing is still important?
I think of it as the powerhouse of your digital marketing. So social media and different social media channels now get more buzz. But at the end of the day, people spend most time, most often in their email inbox. So that's where you can hit them. So I have an exercise that I often do when I'm speaking to small business audiences, and I'll ask people to, you know, put their hand up if they've used Facebook, Twitter or LinkedIn that day. And, you know, somewhere between a third to two thirds of people normally put their hand up. And then I say, okay, right, so now put your hand up if you've used Instagram, YouTube or Pinterest for business today. And fewer people put their hand up. It depends on how tech savvy the audience is. And then I say, okay, who has used email for their business today? And everybody puts their hand up, unless they're those obstinate people that will never put their hands up for anything. And that's really the kind of easiest way to show the prevalence that email still has in our business culture. And it's just the fact that you can actually get to people when you want to. There's even some interesting statistics that show the extent to which people will go on to make a purchase from an organization if they've received an email from them but didn't even open the email. You know, it's just that fact of showing up consistently in front of people is a benefit in itself.
Would you say that emails are more trusted as a form of communication than a LinkedIn message or a tweet, for instance?
I don't know that it's a case of more trusted, because we all get spam emails or things that we think might be spam, and then we look at them suspiciously and you know, delete them right away, unless you are my mother, who has ended up with some viruses at odd times, but now she knows to ask me, which is an improvement. But I don't think it's a case of trust. I think it's a case of what do you expect that medium to do. So, for example, I mean, like, We are very pro opt-in email. We absolutely do not believe in spam. And in fact, if you've bought a mailing list, you cannot use it with Constant Contact. So what I think is a benefit of opted-in email communications is that people have actually put their hand up and they've said, yes, I do want to hear from this organization on these subjects, because, you know, a proper email opt-in tells you what you're actually going to get. And that people then expect it and they accept it as well, if the expectation has been set appropriately and their expectations are being met, if they're getting what they want out of it. I think with LinkedIn messages, it's not the medium, but it's the way that people use them. So I find that a lot of the LinkedIn messages that I get are out of the blue from people I've never heard of. Gonna delete that. unless it's really funny, normally, unless it's something, and I've only had a couple of those ever, but ones where it's been really humorous and I've actually thought, you know what, I'm gonna look a little bit deeper into this. Same with, I mean, Twitter direct messages. I think it's great now that you can actually it's made easier for you to DM people who aren't necessarily following you, because there's always that problem where you'd get someone saying DM me and then you'd be like, I can't because you're not following me. But I can see, you know, people are already starting to abuse that with just out of the blue sales messages. So it's not the medium, it's how you use it.
Right. Okay. And if you aren't really onto this already, how would you start to go about creating an email marketing strategy?
It's actually very simple, and there's a process that I've outlined for people before, and they kind of go, oh, great, it's not that hard. So first of all, you need to use a good email service provider, whether it's Constant Contact or someone else. Use a proper service. You cannot do good email marketing through your Outlook or your Gmail or your Hotmail or whatever. it's just not as professional, and you're not going to be managing things like, you know, the unsubscribes and that kind of stuff properly. And, you know, good email marketing service providers have that covered for you. So number one, sign up. If you use us, we actually give you a lot of free coaching and support as well as part of that. The second thing that you need to do is you need to encourage people to actually join your mailing list. So you can do that in a couple of different ways. One is by just actually telling people the value of it. So when you have a little, you know, you have those little sign up boxes on people's websites and it says, join my mailing list. That is not an incentive. That is not interesting. Nobody wants to join your mailing list. However, if it says, get my free weekly marketing tips, which is what I used to use on mine, people are like, okay, if I want weekly marketing tips, and thank you, they're free, I will sign up for that. And then the other way is that you can actually give people what's sometimes called an ethical bribe, or a list building incentive, or a lead generation magnet, and actually put together, you know, one of those free guides or white papers or special reports. And that still works very well. But the key with that is that they are becoming, the more effective ones are becoming shorter. So you want, you know, maybe a single page PDF that's just got some real top tips in it, or a checklist or something like that. So if you're doing those things, you can actually start building your mailing list. And then you want to look at putting together a regular email newsletter, because this is the other thing. I meet so many people and they will tell me, do you know what? I've been collecting email addresses ethically for 3 years and I have never mailed out to any of those people. And you kind of go, okay, well, there's kind of no point in collecting those addresses then. So you have to actually start sending. But it doesn't have to be complicated. Most people try and cram too much into their first email newsletters. Keep it really simple. Just send one thing, whether it's an offer, a tip, a, you know, great video that you found, a recommendation, a link to a blog post. Just send one thing and just start to get that out there and get a good rhythm for it. So, you know, if you want to send weekly, make sure it's always on the same day every week. If you want to send monthly, you know, make sure it's the same day of the month, so, you know, first Tuesday, say, for example, and just get that cadence in there. And then think about forward planning. So one of the worst things to do is to sit down to write your email newsletter because you have to send it out tomorrow and think, I have nothing to write about. So it's a really good idea just to sit down and come up with a whole list of different topics that you could cover, and maybe pull from one of those. Or actually start in advance and say, okay, well, you know, in January I'm going to cover this, and in February I'm going to cover that, and in March I'm going to cover that. And link each one to a call to action as well. So there's no point in sending something out that is just information for information's sake. Tell people what you want them to do with that, whether that's giving you a call, passing it on, you know, downloading an additional guide, whatever it is. And then really go back to building your email list, because this is the thing that I think most people don't understand, is that if you're going to get serious about email marketing, and you should, because it's shown to be, you know, the highest return on investment of any digital marketing medium, and there's some UK statistics that came out, I think, earlier this year, that said it's £38 for every £1 you spend on your email marketing, which is pretty damn good.
That's very good.
Yeah, it's amazing. You want to actually be building your list everywhere that you go. So think about every time you come into contact with someone who is a potential customer, how are you going to get them to join your mailing list? Now, you need to do it without being creepy or weird. But, you know, think about, so if somebody asks you a question, they send you an email and ask you a question and you reply to it by email, is there a link in your email signature that actually says, you know, get more information like this, sign up for our newsletter. You know, when people come onto your event page and they register for a ticket, have you got a tick box on there that says, you know, join my mailing list, find out about more events near you. Think about every single interaction that you have with people online or offline, and then work out how you can actually turn that into a list building opportunity. And basically rinse and repeat. See what works, do more of that, drop the stuff that doesn't work so well, and keep going.
Great. Okay. You covered off a lot of my questions already now for the rest of this podcast. But you touched on it already. What type of content would you say you should put in your newsletter? You mentioned a few types of content. What would you say are the top types of content that really resonates with your audience?
Yeah, there's a rule of thumb. And that rule of thumb is you either have to be very useful, very interesting, or very entertaining. So if you can fit one or more of those categories, then you've got good content. People always jump straight to thinking, oh, well, I need to send out an offer every time I send out a newsletter. And this is for service-based businesses and B2B-based businesses as well as B2C. People just tend to gravitate towards thinking I need to do an offer. And I say, don't. That's not necessarily what people want unless your whole business model is we send you the latest offers. So think about, what do your people want to know? What are their frequently asked questions? What are the things that you know would make their lives easier in terms of using your products or services if they were only aware of it? So that's a kind of a useful thing. You can also look at, you know, what's happening in your industry that they should know about, but they're not necessarily going to be aware of. And that's particularly good for people like, you know, financial advisors and lawyers and those kind of people, because there's no way that I'm going to know, as one of their potential customers, that I'm going to know everything that's happening in the financial world or in the legal world. And even if I was aware of it, it's probably in language that is not going to be easy for me to digest. So if they can translate that into something that's really useful, and that's really engaging and that's easy to access, then I'm going to lap that up because I need to know that stuff, and they're making it easy to understand. So that's one of the places that I would start. I think in terms of being entertaining, this one is kind of open to interpretation, and I would tread very carefully. So unless you're quite confident in the fact that you can come over with something that's entertaining, that's not going to harm your brand and is in fact going to enhance it, I would be very wary how you do that, because, you know, not everybody has the same sense of humor. But I tell you, someone who does that really well, it's a lady called Jo Tall, and her company is Off to See My Lawyer, and she's someone that I've been in contact with for quite a while, and I helped her set up her first newsletter. And she has something in there that she calls her legal chuckle. So she will have a legal tip, and she focuses on serving small home-based businesses. And so she'll have like a legal tip, something they need to know about, and then she puts in her legal chuckle. And that will be something a story from the recent world of law that is quite amusing. So there was one where there was a chap who had committed a murder in India. Doesn't sound funny right now. It gets better. He committed a murder, and they didn't know that, they weren't aware that it was him. It was actually I think the nephew of the victim. The way that they found it out was because the victim's parrot actually told them that he'd done it.
Wow.
I know. Amazing. Things you wouldn't think about. There you go. So that's actually something that you go, wow, that's incredible. So that kind of information, those kind of out of the ordinary things that you wouldn't necessarily find out if you're not a specialist in the industry are really great. The interesting angle is something that I think you can pull into both sides of that. So, interest, and what's interesting is something that that you need to actually work with your customers on. So when you're talking to a customer face to face, if they say to you when you mention something, oh, that's interesting, make a little note of it. Make a little note of what it was that you were talking about, because that could be great content, you know, not just for your emails, but for your blog as well, and potentially for your social channels too.
Great. Okay. So that's kind of the content you should be using. What about the big no-nos? What do people not want to read, and what should you avoid sticking in your newsletter?
Oh, yes. there are a few things that that I'd come across again and again with email marketing that just drive me absolutely nuts. So there's a couple that I can give you a list of, and I'll try not to go off on a complete rant. But I think the first no-no for email marketing is not using permission only as a very basic starting point. So I do not want to be spammed by anyone, and even if we get someone who's one of our customers who just decides to randomly add me to their mailing list, I will kind of, I'll send them a little note saying, you know, this isn't a great idea, because nothing is designed to is going to annoy people more than to start with. So the second thing that you don't want to do is forget to include a call to action, because as I mentioned earlier, what you should think about is where you've got your content topics, what your call to action could be. And your call to action should be something that is designed to move people closer to becoming your customer. It doesn't have to make them buy now, because not everybody has a buy now type of business. If you are an architect, people don't press a big buy now button on your website and order a 7-story office building. That's not how it works. There's a consultation process in there. They get to know you. They get interested in your work. So your call to action could be, you know, have a look at our latest designs, or, you know, vote for us in this competition, or hear from one of our happy customers. So there's all different stuff that you can have in there, but there should always be something that you're trying to get them to do. And when you're doing that, try and avoid passive language. And this is something that is particularly a problem in the UK. So if you're saying, like, here's an example, if you're saying, you know, we would like to, or our aim is to, it can come across as a bit, well, just wishy-washy is the right word. And it doesn't fill me with confidence. So, you know, I'm not really bothered about what you would like to do. What I want to know is what you're going to achieve for your customers, and therefore what you're going to achieve for me. So try and use more active language. So not we would like to, but we will, or we are doing. That makes it a whole lot stronger. And I guess one of the other things as well is that you don't want to over rely on just talking about your products and services the whole time. You should include it, because what we find with a lot of customers of all different types of businesses is they get to know you for one thing, and they forget that you do anything else. So yeah, absolutely, you should tell them about the other stuff. That happens all the time, doesn't it? It happens with absolutely everyone. But you don't want to just, you know, be sending out an advert every single week or every month, however often you connect with people. You've got to make sure that it's a balance. So include information about your products or services, but try and make it relevant to the topic of your newsletter. So if the topic of your newsletter is, we have this new service and here's how it can help you, that's great. That's obviously going to be a service-based email. But if your topic is something more like, you know, 3 ways to grow great lawns this summer, if you're a gardening type business, obviously not if you're in business services, that would be weird. But if you're a gardener, then, and that's your topic, then you would want to relate a service to that. So maybe you're going to actually talk to them about your lawn care service that you have, or your, I don't know, your lawn touch up kind of midsummer thing that you could offer. So I would say you've got to strike a balance, and that includes actually thinking that you can't talk about yourself as well and your achievements. I think do it in a nice way. You don't have to be, what's the word? Humble bragging. You don't have to do that, the false modesty thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're really happy that you've done something great, then, you know, then talk about it. And that can be anything from getting a really brilliant review to, you know, winning an award or completing a very complex project. You know, as long as obviously you have your customer's agreement, go ahead and talk about it. People are actually interested in you, and as long as you don't just bang on about yourself the whole time, yeah, I think that balance can make it very positive.
That's interesting, because we have a Link Humans, we have a monthly newsletter,
And yeah, in a way, we share a lot of content, from our blog and other places goes in there. And sometimes we put, you know, products and services in at the bottom just to say, you know, this is what we do. And it never gets any clicks at all.
Right. So I would think that, so having seen your newsletters, yours are very much a kind of an information roundup. So you're one of the organisations where you've got quite a lot of content in there. I think that's okay, though, for you, because people see you as an information hub. What I would try and do is tie some of the products and service type items closer to the content items. And, you know, don't leave it down the bottom. You don't, there's nothing that says that you have to do that. I would try, I think, because do you have three columns? I can't remember whether you have two columns or three columns.
We do have three columns there. We just changed the look of it.
Yeah, so in your three columns, there's no reason why, you know, one of the items in a row couldn't be a service base. And in fact, if you were smart about it, you could actually have, you know, information item about a specific issue and a problem and how that gets solved. A customer comment about how you're helping them to deal with it, but more about how they're overcoming it than you. And then the next one could be actually how you can help if somebody else has the same problem.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'll have to look at that for the next installment of the Link Humans newsletter.
Great. Try it. That's the great thing about email, is there's always another go.
That's true. And very good analytics too. You can see who's clicked and who's open and all these bits, which is great.
Yeah, you can see what works.
And in terms of, you know, when you send a newsletter, I imagine the email header, the subject line, is one of the most important things to, you know, to get the opens. How do you create a header that works?
Yeah, so a subject line or a header, because they're two different things.
Oh, sorry, I think I meant subject line, as in the one that comes into your email inbox.
Yeah, so the thing that you see before you open it. Yes, so what a lot of people don't realise is that the only purpose of a subject line is to get your email opened, right?
Yep.
So think about that, it's only purpose. It's not to necessarily, you know, to provide education in itself. Its only job is to get that email opened. And most people don't look at them that way at all. Now, saying that, if I get an email from you and it says free chocolate in the subject line, there sure as hell better be some free chocolate in there, or I am coming for you, basically. So you don't want to be misleading about it, but you want to make sure that it's giving people a flavour of why they should actually open that newsletter. And there's a few key rules. There's something that we like to call the 2-2-2 principle, which is that you've got 2 seconds to grab people's attention. The first two words are the most important, and you have to get them to take action today. So what that means is, A, people's attention spans are short. You've got 2 seconds to grab their attention. So what you want to do is use relatively short words. You want to keep the whole thing pretty short as well. Around 5 words is probably the maximum that you should have in an email newsletter subject line. And it should be very clear what you're offering by people opening your email. And when we say that the first two words are the most important, what we found is that people will read the first two words of the subject line and then decide whether they're even going to bother reading the rest of the subject line. Not open the email, but even the rest of the subject line. Yeah, I know, it's crazy. And then you have to give them some reason that's compelling for them to open that email now, because what happens is when people are sorting through their email inboxes, and I do it and you do it and everybody else does it, but we do it subconsciously, is that as you're looking down your inbox, you are kind of going through the now, later or never process, which means that you're deciding whether to open a message now, deal with it right away, put it on the back burner and deal with it later whenever you get to it, or just never going to open it, so you're going to delete it right now. And that's what we do. So we open our inbox in the morning and we're going down going, it's a message from my mum, must open it now. Or, you know, this is something I'm not as interested in. I'm maybe going to open it later, or it's a very long message. I'm not going to deal with that right now. And this is something I don't know why I've been sent it. I'm just going to delete it. And we do that. We go through it. We're like, now, now, later, 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 never. And the problem is that a later is actually a well-intentioned never. I've got a folder in my Outlook, and it's called Things to Read. And despite the fact that I tell people about this on a weekly basis, if not more frequently, I still put stuff in there, and I've never been into there to get any information out, ever. Mm. And it's normally because there's things that I think I ought to read, but it's just too long to deal with right now. Or it's just not, you know, it's kind of, it's timeless is the wrong word, but there's no urgency to the information. So what you want to do is you want to think very carefully about that. And the default position should always be, tell people what's in your newsletter. So instead of saying, you know, July Link Humans newsletter, because A, I know it's July, B, I know you're Link Humans because I can see your from name, and C, you know, I know it's your newsletter because I signed up for it. There's no point in that kind of subject line. You want to actually say, top three things that you might not know about Twitter, or whatever your headline article is. You know, latest tips on, you know, tickets available for. So you want to kind of put in there something that is telling people what they're going to get out of actually opening it. And that's the very, very best thing that you can do. We have a customer who does really, really well with her open rate, and she runs a small salon. And what she does is on a Friday morning, she sends out an email, and it just tells people what open appointments she has for the weekend. And she normally offers them at a slight discount and like fills up really quickly. And her subject line is always how many appointments she has for that weekend. So it'll say, you know, 7 free appointments this weekend, or 3 free appointments this weekend. And then there's urgency there, because people are like, oh, if I want to get one of those appointments, I'm going to have to go ahead and open that right now and see, you know, get myself booked in. So yeah, it's that 2-2-2 principle. And also think about that now, later, or never. You want to make sure that you don't end up in the later or never pile. You want to be in the now pile.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I've started using Google Inbox,
which
has a really nifty feature called Snooze. And you can snooze emails to tomorrow or next week, or there's even a button saying someday. And of course, whenever it comes back into my inbox, I've no interest anymore. I just go, So what you said there, when you postpone something, it might be well-intentioned, but it does mean that you're very unlikely to actually read all about it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, that's a long understood sales issue. You know, you have to get people to commit there and then, even if they don't actually make the purchase at that point. You know, whether it's at an event that you're selling at, or, you know, you have a customer in front of you who's buying insurance or whatever. But that whole, you know, I'm going to go away and think about it, is salespeople know that that's the kiss of just doom for them, because it's very, very unlikely that those people are necessarily going to come back. I mean, there's ways to win them back. But yeah, you want to try and give people all the information and get them to make that choice right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned earlier, when you talked about the strategy, you mentioned about call to actions and emails.
Yes.
How can you help your readers to take that call to action? And again, I guess to take that call to action today.
I think, A, make it really clear. So tell them what you want them to do. So that means you have to decide what it is that you want them to do first off, and you have to be able to communicate that in a simple way. So, you know, you want to get it down to a couple of words or a very short sentence what you actually want them to do. And then visually, you need to call it out. So you want to, you know, use a nice bold underlined link, or a button, or You know, make sure that that button is a brighter color that stands out. And there's all sorts of information and studies that have been done on which color buttons work best for which sort of things and all that kind of stuff. But you just want to make it really, really clear and make sure that the call to action itself isn't overcomplicated either. I've seen a lot of call to actions where it's like, you know, phone this number and quote this code and then have these things ready and blah, 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 blah. Whereas actually just saying, look, just call us. Here's the number. Or they say, give us a call, and then they don't include the phone number. And I don't want to have to go and hunt around your website to find your phone number. You know, it's like, give me the number right then and there. So, yeah, those are the things that I would say make it easy. And of course, it has to be something that people actually want to do as well. There's got to be a good reason.
Yeah, for sure. Great. And what's if we come towards the end of an email, what's the perfect email sign off? You've written something about SWALK.
Oh yes, SWALK, like sealed with a loving kiss. Yeah. So I think that originated in World War II, which is what servicemen would write to their sweethearts, and then that's how they'd sign it off. And I think that it's still a good way to think about actually making your email sign-offs appropriate. Now, I'm not suggesting that you need to put kisses at the bottom of every email, but you want to make sure that people feel like you're communicating directly with them and that it's personal as well. So there's a couple of key things. So first of all, include your contact information. They can find it out if they want to anyway, but I'm always slightly suspicious of people that want my contact details, i.e. my email address, and then won't give me theirs. So make it feel like it's a proper personal email, like with your Outlook or your Gmail signature that you use for work, and have your contact details in there. And then something that I do is I use a handwritten signature. So I did this by just writing my first name as if I was signing it. Didn't do the whole thing because you don't want people forging checks, but wrote my first name just on a white piece of paper and then scanned it. And then I used that. So my emails, like say, you know, Tamsin, they're signed off at the bottom. And do things like adding in your social media links as well, because that tells people that you want to hear from them, you want to connect with them in other places. And actually tell them that too. So, some people that I've seen have you know, they've got their little row of icons and it'll say, come and say hi at, or we'd love to see you on. And those kind of things I think work really well. It feels friendly and it does add to that trust factor as well. And then I think having a picture on there is great too. I always did that with my newsletter. I continue to do it with the messages that I send out on behalf of Constant Contact as well. And I think it's nice. I think people, we are evolved to respond to human faces. So if you can show your face, and it doesn't have to be the world's greatest picture, as long as it's, you know, professional, not your holiday snaps, please. But and you've got a bit of a smile. That's what people want to see. They want to see that you're a real person. And a little kind of bonus tip as well is that you can always add a PS to your signature. Studies show that a good PS gets a lot of attention and a lot of clicks, so you want to put your key call to action in the PS. And I always like to do my PSs in bold and italic, so it kind of calls out, because people, when they're scanning, because we all know nobody reads things from the first word like right the way through anymore, they scan and then they go back. It will jump out at them, and you know, people look at headlines and then PSs, and those are the kind of the key things that stand out to them.
Great, okay. And you mentioned social media there, and I know you and Constant Contact, you do a lot more than email marketing. Mm-hmm. But how can you combine email marketing with social media?
Oh, there's a couple of different ways. So I would say that the first thing that you want to think about is actually how you can use social media to build your list. In fact, let me just give a bit of context here. Social media tends to create different types of relationships than email. at different rates. And what you can do is you can use the power of both of those types of relationships to really help you. So email will create very deep relationships, so building that feeling of trust and understanding very, very quickly, because you're constantly showing up in their inbox and they see you and they see your face and all that kind of stuff. But your number of people that you're contacting tends to be smaller because they have to opt into you. If you're doing things right, they have to opt into you, which is what I thoroughly recommend. However, on social media, you can much more quickly reach a larger number of people, but the relationships there tend to be a little bit more tenuous. So I think of, I actually think of social media as more of a broadcast medium than email, really. So for example, I mean, I have some very close friends that I met through social channels, but we didn't become friends and we didn't take the relationship, you know, to a more personal level than just Twitter or Facebook until we actually moved away from those channels. So it was when we decided to have a phone call or meet up for coffee or something like that. So here's how you can use the benefit of both of those things. Because what ideally what you want to do is you want to get everybody who is on your mailing list, on your email mailing list, connected with you on your dominant social channels, and also get the majority of your social followers and fans onto your mailing list. You're never going to get 100% of that, and you know, and the numbers will skew more towards one side than the other, but that's what you should aim for. So there's a number of good things that you can do. So first of all, actually linking back to your website from your social profiles and your newsletter, and have a landing page on your website that is designed to get them to find out more. I think the first time I saw someone do that really well, it was a friend of mine who's based in the US, Peter Shankman, who's quite well known in sort of PR circles. And he had his Twitter bio link went to a page on his website that was titled, "So You Found Me on Twitter." And he, you know, gave a bit more of a detailed bio, explained what kinds of stuff he posted, you know, and that's a great place to also add in a sign up link for your mailing list. Because if I've gone to the bother of actually clicking on your link in your bio, I probably want to know more. So that's one great way. But then you can also do things like posting on your social channels about your newsletters and email updates. So a customer of ours, Karen Haller, is really great at that. She sends out a monthly newsletter, which is about colour and design. She's an applied colour psychologist, so she does a lot of work with colour branding. And she will send out, I think the day before her newsletter goes out, she sends out a message on Twitter and LinkedIn that says, my colour branding digest or colour and design digest is coming out tomorrow. Still time to sign up, and then adds in a link. So people are like, oh, something's coming out tomorrow. If they're interested, they're going to click that link. So, and I think that's really clever as well, because that's even before the newsletters come out, you're able to actually get people onto that month's one. You can also do things like posting your newsletter to your social channels as well. We've got a function that's built into Constant Contact that does that for you, in fact, for LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. So what happens there is if I write a newsletter today and I schedule it to go out tomorrow, at the same time that it goes out to my mailing list tomorrow, it would also go out to my social channels. And you can choose whether you want it to go or not, and you can update it and customize it and add in thumbnails and all that sort of good stuff as well. So, you know, you've got a lot of control. Some people worry that it means that, you know, we're just going to randomly post to their social channels for them, which isn't the case at all. You've got a lot of control, but it means that then people are actually able to see it and you get that extra reach. But if you do that, one of the things that you want to do is you want to make sure that you include a join my mailing list button or link in your actual email newsletters. This sounds weird.
Yeah.
It sounds really
weird. Makes sense. Yeah.
But it's for when things get passed on. So this happens to me a lot. Like I've had, And I've had newsletters that I've received either from our customers, our partners, or just random people that I thought were really good. And I thought, oh, I really want to share this. And either I want to send it on to someone specific, or somebody has shared something with, you know, shared a newsletter with me, or I've wanted to share it on my social channels. And if the right links aren't there, I can't do that. You know, unless there's a view online link, I can't pick it up and share it on my social channels. You know, and if somebody sends me a newsletter, in fact, this happened this morning, my colleague Manal sent me a newsletter that she'd received, and I wanted to sign up for it, but there was no sign up link. And when I clicked on their call to action button, it didn't take me anywhere that I could sign up. It was really annoying, really annoying. So, you know, there's an organization there that I've made two attempts to sign up with that won't let me sign up with them. And I'm a good prospect, you know. So you want to think about all these little things. So and it's not just a case of that email feeds social or vice versa. It's like, I like to think of it like a cycle. So yes, you should have links to your social profiles in your newsletter, because then people can be encouraged to find them there. And yes, say on your you know, on your Facebook page, you want a nice sign up box that explains to people what they can get there, and that might be one of those places you want to use one of those incentives that we talked about earlier, and set up a little app that does that, which you can do with us. But they're really, you know, they're really cool. It gives people a bit of something extra that they're getting it. So I could go on and on. There's like a million different ways, but I realize this is turning into more of a monologue.
That's fine. Great. Okay, those were all the email marketing questions I had for you. My final question, before we ask how people can get in touch with you, is that you wrote something about an article called "You Are Not Richard Branson," which really caught my eye. Can you elaborate on this?
Yes, absolutely. This is one of my soapbox topics, and I was amazed actually that the article that I wrote was picked up by Virgin and then by Richard Branson himself, who retweeted it, and I think I got like 3 million impressions in a couple of hours. It was incredible. But luckily he didn't take offence, which was good too. But my thing is, so I have a small business background. I was running my own small businesses. I was helping other small businesses, and I would read a lot of, you know, small business information and go to events and seminars. And I felt like what small business people were being told was that they had to act in a certain way in order to be successful. So in order to be considered a success, you have to strive to become the next Richard Branson. That is the message that's out there. And I think that you know, shows like The Apprentice and Dragon's Den kind of perpetuate that even further. And Richard Branson's always the one that's held up as being, you know, this example of someone who started his business from nothing and then it's grown to this incredible empire. And I think, frankly, that it's a crock of shit. I really do. I apologize for my language there if anyone's offended. They shouldn't be, but I do apologize for my language if anyone's offended, but I really care about this, because what I think that message does is that it undermines all of those people who, you know, through their own hard work running their own business, they keep food on their family's table. You know, they send their kids to school, they pay their mortgage, you know, then even better, that they employ someone else. Those things are all really, really important, and that is also a measure of success. And that article was really about the fact that your business success should not be defined by what anybody else tells you. It should be defined by what you want to achieve. And if you want to be the next Richard Branson, then good on you. That's brilliant. But you don't have to aim for that just because somebody else tells you that that's the right thing. And I have quite a personal connection with this, because it's something that happened to me with my business. I was running my tiny little marketing agency that was me, you know, the dog and a part-time helper, not necessarily in that order. It's just that the dog was normally next to me at the time and the part-time helper wasn't always there. And I was slowly going nuts. I was trying my best to deliver great quality work at reasonable prices to people that really needed it. You know, I know that I was good at what I was doing, but I was very, very stressed. I didn't have any time for myself, and I was slowly going insane. And it wasn't until I completely restructured my business, because I thought that it got better, because I thought that, you know, well, this is what you have to do. If I'm going to be successful as an independent marketer, then what I need to do is I need to build up an agency. That's the way it is. I bought into somebody else's idea of what that success was. And it was actually the fact that I was diagnosed with breast cancer about 5.5 years ago that actually made me stop and think, because I thought, I can't keep on like this if I have to go through treatment and if I'm having chemotherapy and all of that kind of stuff. And that was the thing that made me take stock and say, okay, well, what do I enjoy working on? How can I run my business in a smarter way? How can I remodel this? And I did. And that's when I started supporting other people who wanted to do their own marketing rather than trying to do everything for them. And then about, you know, half an hour after I'd figured out that was the right thing to do. Oh, and I also decided to sack the clients that I wasn't enjoying working with at the time. There's always one, isn't there? Yeah. And you just have to make that decision. But it was only about half an hour after I figured that out that I kind of went, why didn't I do this anyway? How did it take me getting, you know, a really scary diagnosis? And I was very fortunate because I got off very lightly and I'm fine now. But it was a scary time for me. And how did it take that to make me actually look at what I wanted instead and what would make me happy? Because it was still a business I could scale. It was just, you know, it just wasn't going to be the kind of traditional marketing agency, and that was fine. Mm. So yeah, so that's my thing. I believe in very much helping small business owners to figure out what their business means to them, and then make the most of that in the most positive way for them. And that's what You're Not Richard Branson is about.
Great. Okay. Thanks so much for elaborating on that. How can people learn more about email marketing in general, the work that Constant Contact do, and how can they connect with yourself?
Yeah, sure. So have a look at our website. Go to constantcontact.com. You can take a free trial there. Anybody, by the way, that takes a free Constant Contact trial, they will actually get a call from one of our email marketing coaches who will talk to them about their strategy and help them out with that, which is kind of nice. It's free. But we've also got a whole load of really great information on our website. We've got listings for our educational events that we run, which most of them are free. So do go there and have a look. And if you want to connect with me, one of the best ways to do that is on Twitter. So I'm at TamsinFD, so that's TamsinFD FD for Fox Davis, and you can find me there, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn. Just say where you heard of me, so I don't think that you're one of those random, like, kind of, you know, just LinkedIn spammers. And I'll be more than happy to connect.
Yep, there you have it. All your steampunk questions to Tamsin on Twitter, LinkedIn, other
Please
places.
Do.
Great. All right. Thank you very much for your time today.
You are welcome. It's been my absolute pleasure.
That's it, folks. Why don't you email us your feedback for once? Try jorgen@linkhumans.com or just tweet us @linkhumans. And before I go, of course, I want to remind you to check out SM London Live, which is happening on the 11th of November. Head on over to socialmedialondon.co.uk, punch in the promo code podcast, and you'll get an exclusive discount. Thank you very much for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.